Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. I want to welcome all of our listeners tonight. Red, are you with me yet? My co-host, Red Beckman, should be on here shortly. And,
you can't hear me? You don't hear me?
I do now.
Yeah.
I do hear you now.
Yeah, well, that's the way it's supposed to be, I guess.
I guess. Red, I believe our guest, Mona Doctor, is already online with us, I believe. Mona, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, it's good to hear her.
Hi, Red. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and I've been doing better ever since I talked to Jim Thayer this morning, and he was telling me about your little escapade up at St. Ignatius, and I've been smiling all day.
That was quite fun.
I'll bet
well,
it was.
Red, for our guests that are not really familiar with Mona, would you like to give her a little introduction?
I sure would. Mona Doctor is a lady that was in the hierarchy of the Republican Party in Montana. And she got turned off of party politics, I think, somehow or other, and her and a couple of her friends, they decided that they were going to start a series of meetings, and they did, and my goodness, the response they got was fantastic. And, of course, I went to Hamilton, Montana in September, the 15th of September, and was able to talk to about 500 people, and what a thrill that was for me. And Mona is, she has been very, very busy from what I hear. And so I think we need to let her tell us about what they're doing in Western Montana.
Yeah, well, I guess I probably should give you a little, for the listeners' benefit, a synopsis of what's been happening over the last year and actually 14 months or so. And yes, Red, you're right. Got involved with the party because I was very ignorant and wanted to learn more, because every time I went to the ballot box, I didn't really understand who I was voting for and why I was there. And so through the process, I learned a lot about the Republican Party, about the Democratic Party. And I tell you what, didn't see much difference between the two. So I decided to check out of that hierarchy, as you say, and started the Celebrating Conservatism movement here in Hamilton. And Hamilton probably has about 5,000 people in its population, 40,000 in the valley, and about 50 miles north of us we have Missoula, which is about 100,000 people. But we live in a nice little valley here, and a lot of great patriots live here. We started out with 55 people in December of 2008, and this past Tuesday, what is today? Today, Thursday? Yeah, this last Tuesday we had, almost 600 people. And that's what, we average between 500 and 600 people every month at our meetings. And I tell you what, it's growing, and what's great is there's so many great people that are being discovered for leadership. You know, we're a volunteer army, and we don't appoint anyone to do anything. It's a free enterprise market system. It really works when people volunteer and they're not forced to do it, right? And
right.
What's really cool about that is people's talents and their skills and their voices are being heard because they have a place to speak up finally. So we're excited, and we're now planning a huge event in May 21st and 22nd at the university. We plan to have, our vision is to have 5,000 people from all over the country come together, and it's going to be called the Liberty Convention 2010, and we have tickets now, and we are going to have them up on our website probably by tomorrow, the next day. So, lots going on.
You're going to want me to stay around so I can go to that.
You need to come, Brad. You better be here.
I'd like to be there.
I'd love to be here. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to try to help you make some more connections in eastern Montana, so that you're working pretty much all together, you know, all in the same, there's that group at Laurel, Montana, with several hundred people involved, but I don't think they're having much in the way of regular meetings that I know of. But they do have email connections with, I think they said, over 900 people.
Great.
And
excellent.
Yeah, and I'll try to make some connections for you, and see if we can't get all of Montana working, because as you get those initiatives ready for the ballot and need the signatures, you're going to need a lot of help. And those volunteers are going to have to step up to the plate.
That's right.
That's hard work getting those signatures. But with the mood of the people, I think it's probably going to be the easiest that you've ever seen in Montana to get signatures on initiative petitions.
I totally agree.
I think that there's enough angry Montanans that are going to want their name on those petitions. And, and of course, from what I hear, it sounds like the establishment, they are very unhappy about the possibility of getting a grand jury system working again in Montana. Boy, I'll tell you, if you can get that across to the voters in the state of Montana, they'll pass it by a big margin.
That's right. It's especially when they understand what it means.
Yes, it's going to mean that we the people are going to be able to control the legal profession.
Yes.
That's the big thing, I think, because the legal profession controls the courts, and the courts have been a problem. And the solution, we know what the solution is. But when they give us that new Montana Constitution back there in the early 70s, that was one thing they left out. They did not want grand juries. And so now it has to be corrected.
That's right.
Yeah,
Mona,
well,
can you tell us a little bit more about the gathering in May? Dr. Kate is listening right now. She'll probably come on with us here shortly.
Okay.
Excuse me. And but she's, up in your neck of the woods, and she'd like to know more about the specifics, because, there may be some people there in Wyoming that might want to come up and participate with you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've already had phone calls from Utah, Colorado, Washington, Idaho, and we just put the word out here a couple days ago, so there's some great interest already. 21st of May is actually a Friday, so it's going to be a Friday-Saturday event at the university, at the Adams Center in Missoula, and we're going to start the day out at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon with an Americana Liberty Parade downtown Missoula, which will stretch, I don't know, it's probably about a mile downtown, and it's going to be, we're going to be asking for log trucks, and there'll probably be empty log trucks, but that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Empty log trucks and tractors and, ATVs and horses and hordes of homeschool kids. We've got all kinds of people wanting to do all kinds of things. American classic cars, Harleys, whatever people would want to do to show their American spirit. So that's kind of put Missoula in a little bit of a shock, but that's okay. So we're gonna travel about a mile from downtown to the university in a parade, and then we'll have a tailgate party after that with food, and then at 6 o'clock Friday evening till about 10 at night, we'll have a kickoff Right now we have confirmed Chuck Baldwin to open for us on Friday evening and speak for us. And then from about 8 o'clock till about 10 o'clock, we have an awesome country western band that's going to play for us, and we're going to, you know, do a little dancing, have some fun. And then on Saturday, the 22nd, we are going to start the day out from 9 o'clock until 1 o'clock with speakers. And then from about after lunch, from about 2 to 4:30 or 5, we're going to have breakout sessions, workshops. And those workshops really are going to be all about how do you start your own movement in your area. And we're going to have put together manuals and DVDs and, you know, have an actual working workshop. So when people leave that day on Saturday, they go home with something that they can duplicate, they can duplicate with what we've done here. So that's always the question I get that people call me. It says, well, how are you doing this? And so we'll put together an entire manual for them to take home with them so that they have something to start in their own areas. And then we'll have a final ceremonies that evening on Saturday. So we don't have all the details yet, but we do know the dates, the times, and the tickets right now are $5 for the month of March, until April 6th, actually. So we've got to start raising funds right now to, you know, start paying for all these expenses, and it's not cheap. So that's what we're looking at, and we're really excited, and people are just can't wait to get together. You know, we really got to connect the dots with the people. You know, we've got a lot of great patriots around the country, and in Montana, we want to get everybody connected so that when we, like Brad said, when we have these ballot initiatives or anything else that's going on, then we have the people, the resource and the people to get this done. And so we're pretty excited about what's happening.
So how do people get tickets? Is there an online place where they can go?
Yeah. Yes, we actually will probably have that set up by tomorrow. And the website they can go to right now for the flyer and the information is www.ravalli, that's R-A-V as in Victor, A-L-L-I, dash, not underscore, but dash, B-E-L-L, .com. So it's Ravalli.
Say that one more time.
www.
R-A-V-A-L-L-I dash.
Bell, as in Liberty Bell, .com. So we just created that website this week, and so the flyer is there with the information.
And that will also be the site where they can order the tickets or not?
Yes, they will. From that site, they'll be able to order the tickets, and that capability will be up and running by tomorrow evening.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So tell us what else is going on up in Montana. I mean, there's been a lot of changes, has there not? You mentioned to me that there's been kind of a transformation that's happened.
Oh, yeah. There's a huge transformation going on. Just real quickly, I wanted to share with all of you. Back in October, November of last year, we had Schaefer Cox out and from Alaska, and he totally transformed our movement, took it to the next level. Really, we've been working really hard at trying to express to people that we are trying to erase, and actually we have been, erasing the political and the religious lines in our group because, you know, we have realized and learned how the globalists have tried to divide us in every single way. And so that's really working for us. And Schaefer confirmed that for us when he came out in November. But what Schaefer gave us, he gave us a new paradigm to shift to in our thinking. And, we all have walls in our minds, just like Red talks about in his book. We are really breaking out of that box. And here's what's happening. We now are actually are teaching one another the common law system of old and going back to that, defending, with our motto being defending all and aggressing none, the common law system that we're learning, obviously, you know, dates back years and years and years, and comes from natural law, which is God's law, and it's very simple, and obviously it's common law. I mean, it's common sense. And so what Schaefer delivered to us as one of the systems that they're using in Fairbanks is called the Liberty Bell, which incorporates common law. The Liberty Bell actually is a way for people to watch each other's backs, kind of a community watch system. How it works is this. The requirements are anyone who wants to be a part of the Liberty Bell must affirm or sign the Second Amendment Declaration that Schaefer actually created, and we've instituted as well. And what we did here, which is what Schaefer did, we collected a little over 1,000 names, signatures, attesting to that Second Amendment Declaration, and we just had it put in a full-page ad yesterday here in Hamilton, in the Ravalli Republic. You can go to www.ravallirepublic.com, and that's our local paper, and you can see the full-page ad there. In the center is the Second Amendment Declaration, and it just so happens, I love how God works, just so happens that this week in the state of Montana, Montana Statute 1-1-224 declares the first week in March as the Celebration of Right to Bear Arms Week. And we didn't even know that until Gary Marbot. Gary Marbot, thank God we have him in our back pocket here in Missoula, who was actually responsible for getting the Firearm Freedom Act through legislation back last year. He's the one that actually got that into through legislation back in 1991. So that actually heads up our full-page ad in the paper yesterday. Really good timing. And then also yesterday we had a Second Amendment rally downtown. You know, we had about 75, 80 people open carrying with their signs and their flags and their banners, and we had a great time for during lunch hour yesterday. But anyway, let me get back to the Liberty Bell. So the Liberty Bell requires you to, first of all, you know, sign the Second Amendment Declaration. Then your name then goes into a, we use a BlackBerry phone here. We have about, I don't know, 250 names now in a listing in a BlackBerry phone. And the reason the Liberty Bell was instituted is because there was really no way of holding law enforcement accountable to the way that they were treating citizens or abusing them. And so that was the reason that Schaefer actually instituted that in or created that in Fairbanks. Well, we just got the Liberty Bell up and running officially, let me see, 2 weeks ago, and not even that, maybe, a week and a half ago. And, you know, we were all sitting around one night at our Second Amendment Committee meeting, and one of our guys, who actually is put forth the ballot initiative that would require judges to give jurors their rights in a court of law, and so we're starting the signatures for that petition right now. But he says, you know, I'm really frustrated. I'm on the airport planning board here in Hamilton, and the assistant county attorney has created language in our bylaws that would restrict our First Amendment right to free speech and to protest through the airport board. And so he said, tomorrow at the commissioner's meeting, we're going in to protest this. We want the language taken out. So I said, Frank, call the Liberty Bell. Call the Liberty Bell and let's get a bunch of people down to the commissioner's office. So lo and behold, the next day, we call the Liberty Bell. We send the message out to everybody. And they all get a text message. And 60 people show up at the commissioner's office and filled the room, standing room only, down the hallway. And we have five commissioners. And three of the five commissioners were going to vote for the language in their bylaws, in addition to the assistant county attorney. Well, seven of our people lined up at the microphone, one after another, gave testimony on how put them in their place, telling them that they were our servants and we were the master, not the other way around. They had their constitutions in hand. They read them the First Amendment right out of the Constitution. They quoted Ben Franklin. They quoted Thomas Jefferson, on and on. 7 of them did this. At the end of 30 minutes, there was a unanimous decision to throw the language out of the bylaws.
Amen.
So that is that is one way, okay, that we're going to be using the Liberty Bell to get, because it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, right, on a Thursday. Who is going to know about these meetings? And if they are in the paper, I mean, people don't read them, and they don't really understand what they're for. And most of the people that showed up at that meeting, that commissioner's meeting, had never even been to that building. So now, and as a matter of fact, that same night when Jim Thayer had his Constitution Studies class, it was packed, because half those people that showed up at the meeting that day for the Liberty Bell with the commissioners showed up at our meeting that night and were so excited that they can actually feel like they're connected with other people in the community. We have special decals that are on the back of our cars. It's just a Liberty Bell. So eventually our goal, our vision is to have the Liberty Bell to go viral throughout the state of Montana and then throughout the country. So I'm telling you what, it's just so exciting and what's happening with the people, because they're seeing there's something actually that they can do. And there's a fellowship and there's a camaraderie and there's a bond. And I tell you, it's one big family. And they're helping and really watching out for each other. So it's exciting.
Well, we also have...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Red. I'm going to do some typing while you're talking.
I just, you know, it's such a thrill for me to hear this this report. You know, after having banged my head against the wall in Montana for so many years. And now, you know, I had said it over and over again. I think I said it in my little book, Walls in Our Minds, how that I anticipated eventually an economic holocaust that would cause the people to stir and wake up and pay attention. And that's exactly what has happened.
Absolutely. That's what's happening. Obama is the best thing that ever happened for us. We should send him a one big fat thank you card.
Yeah.
Mona?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yes.
Mona, we've got someone listening that's not really up to speed. She didn't want to come on right this second. Her name's Tallulah. She is does Fan the Fire on Saturday nights at Patriots Heart. And she is asking if you are aware of this secret administration memo where they're trying to do a land grab of about 10 million acres from Montana all the way to New Mexico, which is really a halting job creating activity where they're trying to shut down ranching and forestry and mining and energy development. And Kate mentions that a lot of this is possibly in Indian country. And I'm wondering if you have any knowledge of this and if it's something that that you guys are fighting.
Well, I tell you what, you know, we had Michael Shaw from Freedom Advocates speak to our group this past Tuesday night because I wanted him to educate everyone on Agenda 21, which is something that most people don't even understand, and or how the United Nations via Agenda 21 are now attacking us through the takings of our land, and they're doing it in so many different ways. I tell you what, there was so much information that he gave us on Tuesday night. We're all heads are spinning, but now we can understand why at the local level these local commissioners and planning departments and environmental groups are trying to zone us. And I tell you, it's amazing how much we didn't know 2 years ago, or I didn't know 2 years ago. But as far as the takings, I can totally believe it. 10 million acres, I believe it. Michael explained to us that we are a target right here in the Bitterroot Valley of Agenda 21 for takings. they're already trying to do that. Senator Tester has put together the the Wild, what is the name of that thing? The Wild Lands, oh, I can't remember the name of it. It just escaped my mind. Anyway, it would designate, it would take more property, more land, and lock it up, you know, so it becomes the federal government's property, and we wouldn't be able to access it. So they're encroaching on us in every way that they can when it comes to private property. that is one huge way of control. He also explained to us that the, if you look at an Agenda 21 map of the United States, there are it's in different colored areas, and their goal is to reduce, obviously you reduce the population, but also to reduce those areas in which humans can actually live. So we have huge issues with that, and we have to, I tell you right now, and this can be really overwhelming for people, you've got to get involved at the local level. Forget about the federal government, okay? Those guys are cooked. And it's like Schaefer Cox says, you can't unpickle a pickle. You can't. Those guys are done. But at the local level, you can certainly get involved with your commissioners locally, the planning departments, get involved with all of those different, or research those different subgroups that are in your area that are trying to take land. So, and it's happening every day behind our backs, and we cannot let this happen. We can't. So we're pushing back in a huge way here. I know that also Michael Shaw talked about the Yellowstone to Yucatan corridor, which they is a huge land grab as well. So it is, it's quite overwhelming. It really is. But I want people to understand that it isn't overwhelming if you're doing it at the county level. But you must know where it's coming from. It is coming from the globalists. And Agenda 21 is their tool that they've been using to take land. And also, just so you know, the University of Montana-Missoula, right in our backyard, it is a huge think tank for Agenda 21. So we've got it all, got all that going on right here in our small valley.
Wow.
But you've got help coming all the way from up at the Canadian border too, coming all the way down.
Yeah.
You've really got a fire going up there in that area too. I've been hearing about it, and. It's not anything like what you've got in Hamilton at this moment, but they're coming. They'll be, and of course, Helena, Great Falls, Butte, those are areas that need to be rejuvenated. But that'll happen. The people across the state of Montana, when they hear what you're accomplishing, they're going to want a piece of the action.
Absolutely, and that's why it's so critical that people that are going to attend our Liberty Convention, we're going to give them all the details on how-tos on how to get their group started. That seems to be the biggest question I have when people call me. So how do you start? How do you do this, right? And I got to tell you, you got to understand, first of all, you have to understand the global positioning. It's not a Republican versus Democrat versus whatever political line. It is not that at all. You've got to get off of that. You must, or else it will not work. People are sick and tired of Republican Democrat because there's no defining line between the two. They both are controlled by the globalists. So we have to shift that paradigm. And then people ask me, well, so what do you do then? You forget about the ballot box? I said, well, pretty much at the federal level, yeah. But at the county level, you can make a huge difference. You really can. And I even get concerned about at the state level, because in the state of Montana, 51% of our budget is from the feds. So you know what? When you've got 51% of the budget from the feds, those dollars trickle all the way down to the county level.
Mm-hmm.
So we're fighting that as well. Just remember that. So the reason why it's working here, the movement is because we're going from the bottom up. It's grassroots, grassroots. And education is critical for people to be educated and informed about the truth. Because unless you know the truth, you're going to listen to the average media, the Fox News, and even the Glenn Becks. I mean, he I don't know. I get a little concerned about him. Now that I know what I know, I don't know. I'm not real sold on Glenn Beck. He does a lot of good things, but it's just not all the way there yet. Fox News, I don't know. So I think people need to turn them off, need to start learning their Constitution, understand common law, which is basically, you know, do all you say you're going to do, and do not encroach on anyone or their property. If we can do those two things right there, we will be such a powerful force, because that's what common law is. It's pretty simple. Do what you say you're going to do, and don't encroach.
We have to protect each other.
Yes, yes. And it's boiled down to that. It's so simple that you go, are you sure that's all? I said, yes, that's it. That's it. If we can do that, we can have anything we want. If we do it the right way. So, anyway, I lost my train of thought. What's the next question?
Red, do you have another question?
I'm thinking.
Oh, did you want to know about the St. Ignatius story?
Well, I think that was one of the funniest things I've heard for quite a while, and I've had a lot of laughs about the Montana Human Rights Network. They've given me a lot of entertainment over the years, and and of course, it sounds like you were entertained, and you were entertaining both, I think.
Yes. Yeah, let me tell you that story, because it's just too good to pass up. You know, we have been battling the Human Rights Network here for a while, and we know their game. We really do. We understand their game, and all they work day and night, 24/7, on how can we destroy the movement that's happening here, because they know they're losing. They don't have a foothold here anymore, and we're exposing them. You know, you turn the light on, the cockroaches run, and I'm telling you, they're losing here. But anyway, this is what happened. Last year, when Sheriff Mack came to speak for us, of course, you know, the Human Rights Network always puts out propaganda about Sheriff Mack and Red and Jack McClam and Chuck Baldwin, and now I'm on the list. So anyway, Sheriff Mack asked that I get a hold of Travis McAdam, who is the executive director of the Montana Human Rights Network, and ask him if he would be willing to an open debate with Sheriff Mack. And so we have not been able to connect over the last few months. And a friend of mine sent me a notice that there was going to be a meeting just north of us, about an hour, a public meeting that the Human Rights Network was going to have, 20-year anniversary of their local chapter here, and Travis McAdam was going to be speaking. I said, cool, this is an opportunity. Let's go up and let's go be in the meeting and just listen to Mr. McAdam. So we went there, and I can tell you there were more conservatives there than anything else. I think they had maybe a small contingent there of about 10 people, but the rest of us, I think there was probably about 40, 50 people in the room. So I sat right in the front row, had my little digital recorder on my lap just to make sure I captured all the you know, the speech that he gave, and here he goes. He doesn't know me. He's never met me personally, so he didn't know I was sitting in the front row. So he had a little PowerPoint presentation, and he went into how to detect or to find or to recognize right-wing extremists. How do you deal with them, you know, and especially the fact that they're anti-Semites and they're this and they're that. So he went on and on and on, you know, doing his little show, and we listened to him, and all of a sudden he brings up his PowerPoint, and here comes the big pictures of Red Beckman and Chuck Baldwin and Paul Stramer and Rick Jor, who happened to also be in the audience. And then all of a sudden, my picture comes up, and they have a picture of me at one of our meetings, and I'm packing, open carrying. And then he says, and this is Mona Doctor. She and a gentleman called, a man called Dan Cox, started the Celebrating Conservatism group in Hamilton, Montana. And I said, I just can't pass it up. And so I threw my arm up in the air and I said, I'm here! I'm here! And he looked at me and I thought I was going to have he was going to pass out. I thought he was going to pass out. He looked at me like, oh no, she's here. And so he said to me, well, Mona, nice. He couldn't even spit it out. So anyway, for the next few minutes, he talked about our movement, and then he said, I understand that Mona has helped the local Ronan group start their meeting here, and then I said, excuse me, and also we've helped Santa Cruz, California. He said, what? Santa Cruz, California? I said, yes. And Washington, and several towns in Montana, Libby, Kalispell, Whitehall, and we went on and I went on and on about all the locations we've helped people get started, and Grangeville, Idaho, and blah. And so after that, it was so fun to just watch him sweat bullets. It was awesome. So at the end of the meeting, I shook his hand and I said, I just want to officially meet you, and I really am here representing Sheriff Mack, and when can we have that debate? He says, well, I don't know if I can do that or not. I said, well, why would you pass up an opportunity to let the people know what you believe in? Don't you believe in what you're saying? So he said, well, I just don't know if I can do that. I said, I tell you what, I'll call you in a couple days and let's talk about it again. So, you know, finally, I was able to go face to face. And you know what? They're really not as big and bad as they seem. They're really not.
If they didn't have the support of the Lee newspapers, the Daily Missoulian and the Montana
right.
Standard and the Butte, or the Montana Standard at Butte, the Helen Independent Record and the Billings Gazette, if they wouldn't have that support, they would have nothing.
That's right.
Media. It's the media yeah. that is the problem. It's not, not the Montana Human Rights Network. Anything that the Montana Human Rights Network say, they'll print it.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
Well, I can tell you some funny stories about the Montana Human Rights Network. And, of course, our friend there in Missoula, he had written a beautiful letter, explaining some of the crazy things that the Montana Human Rights Network has done over the years. They've just made some terrible mistakes. And, they can't do anything right.
No.
That's the thing. I mean, they just cannot do anything right. They've made so many foolish things. And the Gazette, Billings Gazette, of course, is the one I'm most familiar with. But, they've had egg all over their face.
And if people understood where their origins are from, the United Nations as well. Their declaration is all about appeasing the United Nations, period.
Yep.
It has nothing to do with America.
I dare say there's probably less than a couple hundred people in Montana that are connected to the Montana Human Rights Network. They don't have any numbers.
No.
They just don't have them, and it's rather embarrassing for them to know that some amateurs went to work in Hamilton, Montana, and put something together, and they're drawing hundreds.
I know. I have to tell you something else, Red. I think you'll be really happy about. I forgot about this part. You know, every time the Human Rights Network puts print in paper, in the paper, in the media, they always, always put the word militia in some way, somewhere, somehow.
Yeah.
Right? Right.
Yep.
They always do that. Well, I tell you what, our Second Amendment Committee, decided what we're going to do is we're going to go on a campaign to educate the public on the militia. A true education on the militia. Let's get it out there in the paper. Let's start talking about it, because nobody wants to say the M-word. But you know what? We're saying the M-word because it's in the Constitution. Hello? Yeah. So anyway, we went on this campaign, and I said, okay, I want a task force that's going to be letter writing to the editors. And I want a task force that has the information and education to give to the letter writers. So 2 days ago, one of our gals, Donna Gibney, did a fabulous job, and she wrote an entire article on the history of the militia and why the militia. And they printed it, of course, because it says militia, right? And it was in the Valley Viewpoint of our local paper, and I'm so proud of her. She must, and she's never written letters to the editor before, up until about 2 months ago. So she did a fabulous job, and so now we're just going to continue to educate the public on the word militia, and we continue to stress open carry here as well, so that people become less frightened of, you know, seeing guns, because it's been demonized.
Yeah,
it has
totally
been demonized.
Watch your crime rate go down.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, our sheriff does not, he's not real happy with us. But, oh, well, too bad.
Well, that's where the local ballot box can take care of that kind of a problem.
We're working on that.
Is your sheriff up for election,
yes.
Are you going to vote on a sheriff next November?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And we've got some strategies for that, so.
I'm sure you've got some talent out there that don't know their talent yet, but they'll come out of the woodwork. But somebody should run a series of op-ed type of things about the Montana vigilantes, and bring it to the attention of the people in Montana that it was the Montana vigilantes that brought law and order to Montana. It was not elected officials. It was not the U.S. military. It was the Montana vigilantes. If you haven't read the history of the Montana vigilantes, I hope you get a chance to read it, because it is really, it's a fantastic story. It just is an absolute fantastic story. The vigilantes, they hung the sheriff of Madison County, Virginia. He was the sheriff of Virginia City in Bannock, and they hung him in January of 1864, him and three of his fellow gangsters. The sheriff was the leader of the gang that were holding up all the stagecoaches that were moving the gold out of the gold camps of Virginia City and Bannock. And the sheriff, he was right in the middle of it. He was the guy that made it work. And the vigilantes, of course, they did their investigation. This is grassroots now.
Right.
And they did their investigation and all, and found out that the sheriff was the head of the gang. And so it was the Montana vigilantes that brought law and order to Montana. It was not elected officials. And, of course, a later date, that was the 1860s, at a later date, the vigilantes in northern northeast Montana had to clean up all of the rustlers and the horse thieves and all that. And they did it. It wasn't done by the regular law enforcement. It was the grassroots people had to protect each other and had to protect each other's property from the gangsters. And
sure.
Too many times the gangsters were connected to the law enforcement.
You couldn't tell the difference, huh?
No, there was, I know some stories about Montana in the past, the law was a problem, and they were ripping people off, and the people finally found out what was going on, and they had to clean house. And so, you know, today is no different. We've got gangsters in government, you know, all the way from Wall Street down to your main street in Missoula.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I've never heard of the Montana Vigilantes. Well, I'm excited about reading about them then.
Oh, you've got to do that. Read it, because it is really, it's a tremendous story. And I've had a number of books on them over the years, but I've loaned them out, and then they don't come home, you know.
Sure.
And so I don't have a copy right now. If I do have, it's packed away, and I haven't unpacked from having moved. But the library in Missoula should have it, the Metcalf Library.
Okay.
There should be that should be a good place to look.
Okay,
or
even in
Hamilton, your library right there. There should be talk to your librarian about it, and they should have they should have some copies of it.
Yeah. That,
it's
I'll
a tremendous, it's a fabulous story. It's just, you know, those people, I knew personally the grandson of Nelson Story the First. Nelson Story was the first. He had brought cattle up from Texas way, trailed them up to Montana and the Gallatin area and such, and he was one of the key players in the Montana Vigilantes. And his grandson, I knew him real well. In fact, I sold him a house in Bozeman, Montana. And I remember visiting with him about it, you know, what all happened. And it was just fabulous. And Montana people really, it should be taught in the schools.
Oh, yeah.
Montana history.
Yes. After they teach the Constitution.
And it all goes together. It all fits.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely. Well, you know, I also just wanted to make sure that I let everybody else out there that, you know, you're not alone. You can do this as well. But you know, it's really about simplifying everything. People don't really care about how much you know until they know how much you care. That's what this is all about. And it's about respecting individuals, because our politicians don't respect us as individuals.
We've got to remember that the politicians all went to the kind of schools that you and I went to, and they were shortchanged in their education, and they think that they are doing, they're running the government the way they were taught in the government schools. It never dawned on them that they may have absorbed an awful lot of propaganda. And so if we can rehabilitate them, that's our responsibility. We've got to rehabilitate them if we can. But I think that we are seeing some of that already. I think we're seeing some of the people in the establishment, you might say, that are recognizing that the system that they are part of isn't working well. It isn't working right. This economy, we think it's bad right now, but it's going to get a lot worse. And I remember in the 30s, people were looking out for each other. And we're going to have to do that again here coming up, because it's going to be a tremendous asset to your area. To have the people working together and taking care of each other and being vigilant, you know, watching out for each other, making sure that everybody's got something to eat.
Yeah.
Now, that may be pretty basic, but I think that that's where we're heading. in this country is where people are going to have a problem perhaps finding enough to eat. And in Montana, you've got some advantages. You in the valley where you're at, of course, it's got a lot of fruit, and it's just a great place. And, of course, you really aren't looking for immigrants coming in at this point, I'm sure. But, you know, you've got the potential of being pretty self-sufficient.
And, yes, we do. Yes, we
do. And especially if everybody is working together.
Well, and that's our strength, our strength within our group as well, because we have 10 different committees we've created, and each committee is, well, for instance, we have a Constitution Studies Committee, we have a Second Amendment Committee, we have a Property Rights Committee, we have a Preparedness Group or Committee that's fabulous. It is growing by leaps and bounds, and they're doing everything from food production to solar energy to, you know, living off the grid, communications with ham radios. I mean, they really are doing a fabulous job. That's Jim and Star Farley here in Hamilton.
That is good news.
Oh, boy.
Good news.
Yes, and they've got the biggest hearts ever. They're such givers. I'm telling you, and you know, Red, how that is. There's only two kinds of people out there. You're either a giver or you're a taker. And I'm telling you, we got a lot of givers in our group, so we're excited.
There's something that you want to keep in mind on your Second Amendment thing. During the Reagan years, you may remember, the military had been let kind of slip downhill in the Carter years, and of course everybody thought that the USSR was a real serious threat with their intercontinental missiles and all their nuclear weapons and such. And so the first thing that Ronald Reagan did was start rebuilding the military, and they used the word détente. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
You see, détente is a word that more or less describes a standoff where each side says, you hit me and I'll hit you back.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what has held off the globalists and such. They're you know, struggling right now. They don't know what to do because here we are. We are the best armed people on the face of this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, they are not going to be able to just walk over us. And and that's what they thought they could do. But, you know, I was on the Alex Jones show a couple of weeks ago, he said that they figure that there's over 17 million guns had been sold in this country in like 13 or 14 months.
Wow.
And that's on top of all the rest that we had before, you see. And so we want to use that word détente.
How do you spell that, Red?
It's just D-E-N-T-E, isn't it, Terry? Do you remember?
Détente.
Did we lose Terry?
No, I'm here.
Did I spell it right?
I believe so.
It's either D E or D A.
It's like D apostrophe E T A T, I believe.
Okay.
You know, I haven't seen it in print, and it really describes our position today. We're telling these outlaws that have gotten control of our federal government and our state government to a lesser degree. We're telling them, hey, you hit us, and we have the capability of hitting you back.
Right.
And there's a lot more of us than there is of them.
That's right.
It's D apostrophe E-T-A-N-T, détente.
Okay. Détente. Okay. Thank you, Terry.
Terry sits at his computer, and so he's got all the answers right there.
I'm glad somebody has all the answers.
Yeah, well, it just, I think that we want to, you know, organize as you're doing, and I think that, you know, repeating this, the fact that there's more of us than of them.
That's right.
Sure, we've got millions of people that are going to sit on the fence. That's the way it was in the 1780s or 1770s when the War of Independence was going on. There was a lot of people that sat by and waited to see who was going to win. But there was a committed 5% that they defeated the most powerful empire on the face of the earth at that time. And I think we're going to have a lot more than 5%. I mean, it's going to happen.
We're living in a great time, aren't we, Red?
Well, I'll tell you, I wish I was 20 years younger, but I've done a lot of living in the last 40 years, I'll tell you, since I got really active in this freedom movement. And you just can't know how this thrills me, what's going on and seeing it all happen. I'm just so glad I'm still around to see it.
That's right. You're going to be around for a while. You just don't worry about that.
I'm 81, and the missus will be 81 this month, and
you're not supposed to tell that.
Well, she don't mind anymore. anyway, we're getting response out here in Washington State. There's things happening here, not to the degree that you have in Montana yet,
mm-hmm.
but it's coming. It's going to happen.
Right. It is, well, it's a real groundswell as well. But I tell you, you know, what Jim Thayer has been teaching us through our Constitution Studies class is that not only do we want to protect the sovereignty of our state, but we also want to protect our own sovereignty because we are sovereigns. And, you
Absolutely.
Know, we didn't really understand that until Jim started teaching us that. We really, really didn't understand that because we really didn't think about our rights coming from God being part of that sovereignty. And so I'm telling you, that right there is so powerful. People are walking differently, and they're speaking differently, and they're being different. Once they found that out, who they really are, boy, that right there is powerful. Huge.
Very good. Of course, that goes right along with what I have been saying all these years in my charts. I put God at the top, and I put we the people, you know, underneath, and the Constitution is under us, and the Congress, the judges and the courts, and the President and the White House, they're all under us. They're all under the Constitution.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We're the sovereigns, and that's why the petit jury is so powerful if
mm-hmm.
the people know about their sovereignty.
Yeah.
And the grand jury is so powerful. You know, I've been telling people, don't get all excited and worked up about the election that's coming up in November.
That's
that
right.
vote isn't going to amount to a hill of beans.
Right.
It's your vote on the grand jury and the jury. That's where you control the politicians that are elected.
That's
and
right.
I don't care who is elected. If we can control him after he's elected, that'll be a big change, I'll tell you.
Absolutely.
And that's the way it's supposed to be. We're supposed
no
to
matter.
Be able to control him.
That's right.
You've
that's
got
right.
that.
We never knew we had that. We never knew we had that opportunity.
Yeah. That Senator Tester, he's in his first term in the U.S. Senate. I hope it's his last. But if he gets reelected, he's going to get educated. And he's going to find out what it's like to be a public servant and have a bunch of people that understand their proper position as his boss.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You can have
Mona,
a good center.
Mona, are you going to be able to stick around for a little while longer?
Let me see. What time do we have, Terry?
It's 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. You know, I could probably stay on for another 10, 15 minutes.
Well, we're going to and I'm hoping you'll stick with us till the other side of the break.
Yeah, if you haven't met Dr. Kate, you need to meet Dr. Kate.
Okay. I'll hang on.
So I'll have her come on right after the break, so hang in there.
All righty. Okay.
We'll be back shortly with Walls in Our Minds.
Yes.
Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. I'm here with my co-host, Red Beckman, and we have a very special guest on tonight, Mona Doctor, who is from Montana. Actually, you're from Hamilton, aren't you, Mona?
Yes, I am.
Well, Dr. Kate, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I'd like to introduce Dr. Kate to Mona Doctor. You guys can talk.
Hi, Dr. Kate.
Hey, Mona, this has just been terrific hearing of all your work and all the events that have been happening and the connections you're making. I'm just thrilled and would love to collaborate with you. I'm in western Wyoming, and I forgot where you said you were working out of.
I'm in Hamilton, Montana, which is the Bitterroot Valley, which is about 50 miles south of Missoula.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful. Beautiful. Beautiful territory. So,
yeah.
I'm quite interested in the, you're calling it the Liberty Bell Summit?
It's the Liberty Convention 2010.
Yeah. You know, I'd love to connect Wyoming people with you, because we've been talking about trying to put together a Rocky Mountain Liberty Summit or something like that. And I've also working with some people in Idaho who would be quite interested. So this looks like it's going to be a great gathering.
Yes, it is. We're going to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Boise, Idaho isn't that far from Missoula.
No, it's probably about a 5-hour or 6-hour drive, I think.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's not bad. Yeah.
Right.
I particularly like what you're doing with the term militia, and also beginning to, you know, the Liberty Bell is just such a great idea. Of Schaefer Cox. I met him. He was a delegate to the Continental Congress, and
yeah.
I was as well. So that's terrific that he's laid that kind of stuff out. So I just wanted to say hi and wanted to tell you, you may be aware, at least Wyoming's got a bill on the governor's desk right now that basically eliminates all permits for concealed carry and open carry. So it's, yeah, it really is very good.
Awesome.
Red, I didn't say good evening to you. Hi, Red. Sorry.
I'm enjoying this tonight.
Yeah.
Wyoming, you say you've got it on the governor's desk now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what the status is of the one that was passed in Utah, whether the governor has signed it or not? It passed the legislature.
I don't know. But this one passed 3 readings of legislature in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's very good. And the governor is a Democrat, but, you know, everybody in Wyoming's, you know, wants to carry their guns. So we'll have to see what happens. And we just had a very interesting candidate for governor come rolling through Jackson a couple days ago, and he is sounding the 10th Amendment. He is talking about the need to essentially have the state take care of all these regulations. He sounds pretty oriented towards the Constitution to me, so it's exciting that they're This is beginning to spark, because it's like spring to me. We're not going back. Once this awareness, you know, gets to people, they don't go back because it feels so right.
That's right.
There has been such a concerted effort on the part of some scoundrels to infiltrate the Tea Parties and they've been bad-mouthing the Oath Keepers and all that. I don't think they're going to get very far. I think they better be careful. If they don't watch out, they'll get recruited into the Tea Parties, and this stuff is viral. They might catch the bug.
Absolutely. And I have to, you know what, Red, also, I need to warn people out there. We just had this happen here in Montana. Helped a couple start a group here, about an hour north of us. And after their first meeting, they had 325 people. Second meeting, they had 350 people. And unfortunately, the Republican Party was involved in their leadership, and they unfortunately have hijacked it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the original couple that did start the movement, they resigned because they felt so overpowered by them. So I just want to warn people out there that, you know,
yes,
the Republican Party is really using the movement because this is an election year, and that's the only way they think they're going to be able to win. And you got to call them out. Call them out and keep them in line.
Do you have, Mona, much experience with invasion of your movement? because
absolutely.
I think that this infiltration and what's your strategy? I mean, I feel like we don't have time for it, so I prefer the direct route, like calling people out directly. How do you do that? Or do you feel like your folks that work around with you have that kind of awareness? Because this is, it's critical that we know not to get dragged down into arguments that are intended to break us apart. What's your strategy?
Well, first of all, we have identified, see, Dan Cox, myself, and Jim Sayer, the three of us were involved with the Republican Central Committee last year, thought that we were going to be able to clean it up from the inside out and return it to the constitutional values that the platform has in Montana. Well, that was a big joke. They don't have there is no censure process within the bylaws of the Republican Central Committee or the party. So there's no censure process, which means you cannot hold anybody's feet to the fire. So it's ineffective. It has no teeth. And so what we've done is we pretty much distanced ourselves from that, and we resigned from our positions. And what we talk about is erasing political lines and religious lines. We must get that done, first of all, in our minds. It's not a Republican versus Democrat. It is not even conservative versus liberal. It is globalists against Americans. That's what it is. And once people understand that, when they truly understand that, then they will notice and they will be aware of the infiltration. It's become very apparent here because we talk, the language is different here. And because we focus on the things that we love and we don't focus on the things that we hate. We love our liberty. That's what we focus on. If you
do
that
first. Mona, I'm sure you know that.
Go ahead.
Mona, I'm sure that you know that Red and I have been preaching that message for the better part of a year.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of people who have really caught on to this, and I believe that that is a central part of getting unity in the liberty movement. People have to understand that. I mean, we've got people that, of course, Dr. Kate is well connected with many of the what's called Pumas, which I'm sure you're familiar with, who are Second Amendment Democrats or Jeffersonian Democrats, as Red likes to call them, who believe in this in freedom and they're not really socialists or communists like most of the Democrats that are in Washington D.C. are today, and
right.
So they feel like I did many, many years ago, that the Democrat Party left me, I didn't leave it, and
right.
So PUMA, of course, stands for Party Unity My Ass, pardon my French.
Right.
but we've got to pull everyone together in this movement, regardless of where they are on a political spectrum, who
right.
loves freedom and loves the Constitution, and we've got to shut down these globalists and what I call international banksters that are running Washington, D.C. and running our media and have infiltrated our schools. There's a wonderful video on by a fellow by the name of Norman Dodd, who I believe is a relative of mine, who back in 1982 was interviewed by G. Edward Griffin. And what he did actually was involved in a congressional investigation of the tax-exempt foundations, where he found and even got them to admit that they had a conspired goal of infiltrating our education system. And, of course, today we recognize that they were very effective at doing that. And those foundations are all controlled by these globalists that you're talking about.
That's right. Absolutely. So,
when you're talking globalists, you're the Democrats and the Republicans. They are both run by and controlled by globalists.
Yes, they are.
People have to understand that.
That's right. And you know, Red, you know when Scott Brown got elected?
Yeah.
You know how many people were excited about that? And the next morning, that night, I checked his bio. not even close to being, close to being, you know, what he says he was. And so the next morning, people were so frustrated with me because they were excited, right, down at the coffee shop. And I said, wait a minute, have you even checked him out? You're doing the same thing you've always done. Just because he has an R in before his name, you're just going to trust that he is representing you. So what it turns out to be, he's a wolf in sheep's clothing.
His colors are showing.
Yes, they are.
Well,
and
that's
guess
another
who else's
lesson.
Colors? Guess who else's colors are showing? You know, we've got a lady by the name of Palin who has endorsed
John
McCain
and
Rick Perry.
Yes. Yes.
I mean,
yes.
She's endorsed these people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what makes
Perry,
her any different?
Perry's a Bilderberger. Perry's a Bilderberger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I know people get offended when you speak up against Sarah Palin. I said, well, check her out. Don't just listen to, you know, don't trust everything you hear. Go check it out yourself.
Well, she should have done her homework a little better because I think she started out fairly well, but those Republicans, you know, they didn't waste any time getting her in line.
Mm-hmm.
And let's hope she wakes up to the fact that she's being used. And that she is no longer her own person.
How could she not know that, though? How could she not?
Well, I think she was naive. I think she was naive to start with, and the Republicans rolled out the red carpet for her, and she couldn't resist it. And, of course, that book, I don't know if she wrote it herself or it was ghostwritten or what, but it's making her millions of dollars. And the dollars, they have a tendency to mess with people's minds and their conscience.
Right. Hmm.
You know, have you read the book, Iron Web?
No.
I haven't.
I've got a mental block on the guy's name. I'm sure Tallulah or somebody will throw the guy's name up on something here, the author of that. I could just go grab it and look it up. There it is, Larkin Rose. He wrote a book.
Larkin.
Larkin Rose. Point is that there's a character in his book who becomes president and wins the presidency. And he put on a pretty good show in order to become president, and then once he got in, he showed his true colors, but they weren't bad colors; they were good colors. That he was a true sovereign and wanted to really protect individual rights, but he pretended to be this moderate politician in order to get into office. And you know, I'd love to think that Sarah Palin would be that kind of a person, but I'm afraid I don't know that we run into those kind of fictional characters in real life. It's a tough game to play, but you know, she may be thinking that this is what she has to do in order to get elected, but that's what politicians do. But so did this guy. But once he got into office, he no longer acted like a politician, and I certainly I'd love to think that she might do that. I just have no way of depending on it. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to squelch the conversation here.
Well, The Iron Web
does really, it's a little bit of an anarchist book, and I don't know that some of the things it proposes are realistic. But it does really help one change their view of what it means to be a sovereign individual. And so I do recommend people read it. I just also recommend that I'm not suggesting that I endorse everything in it. That's all.
Well, I would, you know, I've actually heard Larkin Rose on YouTube, and he's quite a young man. He really is. So I would suggest, if people want to know more about him, they Google him or go to YouTube and listen to his speeches.
Well, I've actually had some conversation with him on conference calls, and I don't agree with everything he says, but I, you know, there's a lot to be learned from him. He is certainly,
right.
he just simply goes a little bit too far to the anarchist side of things to suit me.
Yeah.
But beyond that, he's got a lot to offer.
Yes.
Red, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I've never met him. He's made some pretty serious mistakes. Because people were unable to, he just didn't want to communicate with people. And as a result, he ended up spending some time in jail. His wife, too, both. And it shouldn't have happened, but it did. But he's done a lot of homework. He's a young guy, and I'm glad he's on our side, not the other side.
Very true. Kate, are you still with us? I think she's probably back in the chat
room.
I'm here.
It just takes a little while to unmute.
Well, I'm just, you know, I'm excited about what Mona's been talking about, because I believe that this kind of grassroots effort is exactly what's needed across the country. And I don't know if you can get that kind of same sort of spirit going in Montana, in Wyoming. But, I you know, if there can be some synergy built in this whole Rocky Mountain region, the folks that I've run into down here in Denver are just way too scattered, and there's so many different groups, and it's difficult to get any kind of synergy going where people are really starting to pull together. And Mona, it's really, I'm telling you, it's exciting to hear this, and especially when I see some of the things that are going on, like with the Restore America plan, which is very much a top-down group, which it very much concerns me when I see situations like that. We really need to form things just like the well-regulated state militias were originally intended to be, and that is formed from the ground up. And that's what's beautiful about what you guys are doing up there. And it is what will keep it from being disrupted by infiltrators substantially. Yeah. If you're working with local people that you know and your neighbors, and it's a lot less chance of getting infiltrated the way it is in a top-down organization.
That's right. And, you know, honestly, Terry, it's pretty simple. When we say we the people, literally, it is we the people. It's that simple.
Correct.
That's how you boil it down. And when you say that and you actually speak it, and then you empower and inspire the people, watch out. They take the reins and they're gone. They do it. You don't have to tell them what to do. You don't have to. You just believe in them and hold them capable, because for so many years we have been told that we can't think for ourselves. We have to be told how to vote. We don't understand.
We got to have a lawyer. Well, we got to have an expert.
Mm-hmm.
We got to have an expert, a specialist.
Exactly.
Do you remember, Mona, back there in September, I told you that I hoped that these different groups farming across Montana would all use different names, different titles.
Yeah.
And the reason that I said that was that back in the 70s, we had about four or five different organizations that we put out information on. We had Montanans for Constitutional Government, and we had, oh my goodness, can't even think of all of them, but one of them I remember was just one man. Well, this gentleman, we sat in my living room one evening and discussed this, and I told him, I said, you're a great letter writer. He was an older fellow than I. He's passed on now, but he could sit down, typewriter, and just bang out a letter so quick, and he loved to do that. He was an insurance man, and you can be an organization all by yourself. And so he come up with a name, the Library of Documented Evidence, Library of Documented Evidence, or something to that effect. He had letterheads made and envelopes and the whole works. And he drove the news people absolutely bonkers. They would ask him, this, how many of your people are in your organization? Oh, he'd say, I can't tell you. I don't dare. We're just working to document all of the mistakes and the criminal activity of government and public servants, and we're compiling all this stuff. And the amount of information that he got from the different agencies, federal and state, because he had this nice letterhead and he had it all put together, and he'd write these letters to all these different agencies, and they would write back, and they would give him all kinds of facts and figures, and it worked beautiful, and we used those different organizations, the names. And I don't know if you've heard, Mona, about the one at Laurel, Montana. They call themselves Montanans. I forgot that one. Anne Ryan's book, Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, Shrug.
Montana Shrugged. Montana Shrugged. And they
I've heard
her,
of them, but I don't know who they are.
They're out of Laurel, Montana. I'll get you the connection on that. But
okay.
How original, you know, a tremendous original name. And it gets, when they hear that, they know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That book of Anne Ryan's, Atlas Shrugged, was fabulous. And there's been a lot of people in the last year or two that have been reading that book. And in fact, the Agra News, they're coming out of Billings. They recommended that everybody read that book. And so Atlas Shrugged back there, and now it's Montana Shrugged. And of course, I've heard so many of these different names, and I can't keep track of them. But you've got, I don't know how many different names in the organizations between Hamilton and Eureka, Montana.
Yes, we do.
And it's got to be driving the media crazy. They like to deal with the top heavy organizations like the NRA. I use the NRA all the time as a top heavy organization, and they're absolutely worthless as far as I'm concerned at this point.
You're right.
And that's the way it would be if it's happening to the Tea Party right now.
Yes, it is.
They're having some problems, and I'm not being able to convince them yet to change their ways a little. But I have high hopes for the Tea Party people, because those people, they're going to recognize when they've been infiltrated. They're going to recognize it. And they're all sick and tired of Republican, Democrat, the little cat fights that they have all the time. Don't mean anything.
That's right. Well, I think one of the biggest problems, Red, I think one of the biggest problems with a lot of these Tea Party groups is they're still entrenched in the Republican Party. And they're involved with the leadership within the central committees, and they're trying to fill precinct seats with conservatives, and that's a good thing. But when you're part of an organization that's not even doesn't even represent you, and has no teeth in it, that's where they go astray.
Yeah. Well, they're learning that you don't change things by walking up and down the street with a bunch of signs.
That's right.
That just doesn't do it. And so, you know, as this economy continues to deteriorate, I think they'll come around. I have high hopes for them.
Yes.
Well, you know, a special interest is special interest, and a party is a special interest.
Yes, it is.
There's still that indebtedness. There's still something owed there. I really believe that we need, like, the Go.com group, the Tim Cox group, to have some contract with these politicians or whoever's running for office that says, this is what I stand for, and require them to go back and get the literal approval of their constituents before changing any position. Otherwise, give them, have it in their contract that they agree to resign. Make it a contractual relationship that says, if I go against this, what I'm telling you now, I will resign. And I believe that's what it's going to take. I think we got to have that kind of accountability. And, of course, like Red says, when we get the grand juries working right, we can get those restored. That's really the greatest way to hold these judges and politicians accountable, start prosecuting them for doing illegal things. That'll clean things up. But we got to find a way to get enforcement and get people educated so that when they get into these grand juries, they actually have the knowledge and the wherewithal to do something.
Well, just like the word says, you know, the people perish. Why do they perish? For lack of knowledge. We have to get people educated, and I think they're ready, and they are ready. Well, here they are. I mean, that's our focus. We had someone come in this last December as part of wanted to meet with our leadership about, okay, what's the strategy to campaign and raise money and get people elected into office that are conservative? And you know what? The rhetoric was, don't worry about the masses. 5% of you can tell the masses how to vote. Forget about education. We don't have time for that. And I looked at him like, you don't get it. Here we go again. What's the difference between the way the politicians disrespect us and the way that you're disrespecting us right now? You know,
Mona, you seem to be creating a sense of community up there. And you have the bands and you have the food and you do things to make it hospitable at these meetings. And I really commend you for that, because I don't believe there's enough of that going on in the Patriot and Liberty community. I believe that people are really struggling to create that sense of community. And do you believe that a lot of the people are coming to these meetings as a result of that kind of hospitality and sense of community?
Absolutely.
Fellowship is the word for it, too.
Yeah, that's it, right? Didn't you see that, Red, when you were here?
Oh, absolutely.
You know? You know, listen, it's pretty simple. You got to feed the people. And all we do is we make it a point every meeting. We start with a potluck. From 6 o'clock to 6:45, we supply the hot dogs, we supply the water, and everybody else brings chili, cornbread, salads, desserts. And I'm telling you what, it is a feast. And you must feed the men, women. You have to feed the men, okay? Because they're coming off work and they're tired, and you got to get them fed. I'm telling you, people come, and not only that, I watch the dynamics and the synergy that happens around food. There's, like Red said, it's the fellowship. It's the fellowship. Anyone out there that has these, or starting your groups, or already has them going on, you add food, I'm telling you, there's going to be a whole new dynamic to your meeting.
Well, Red, what else do you want to cover tonight while we got Mona on here? Because I know you had a lot of things on your mind that you wanted to take advantage of.
Well, you know, I just, you know, I'm just soaking this up because I've waited a long time to hear this. And you know, I've done a little farming in my life, and to be a farmer, you have to plant seed. And then you see a harvest. And that's what I think I'm seeing right now, is a harvest coming. And it's only going to get better because I think that the globalists totally misjudged they've worked so hard to break down the community spirit and the large cities. You have all these people living in these high-rise apartments, and they don't even know who lives in the apartment next to them. And they've tried their best to get people to move into those kind of situations. That's what a lot of this zoning is about, is to get people crowded in to an area to where they don't develop the friendship and the neighborliness and such in a situation like that. I think it was Thomas Jefferson that warned us about you know, what would happen. He compared to what was happening in Europe at that time, where people were moving into the cities and they were losing their identity as individuals. And so there's no reason in the world why this can't work in the cities too, if they just begin to work together. And of course, we've had all this division, this divide and conquer on the part of the globalists. Have used that divide and conquer. They've used that method against us for so long, and it's taken a heavy toll on our neighborhoods and you know, getting people to live in harmony with their neighbors. And so we've got a lot of work cut out for us, but like I say, I think we've got a harvest coming. You know, I was on that Alex Jones show, and we've had letters from all over the country. In fact, I had a big pamphlet of or stuff coming from some guy in Ohio. He said, I heard you in a meeting in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Ramada Inn, way back, I don't know, 25 years ago. And he has his life has been changed because of what he learned at that meeting back there. You'll never understand how I feel about this, how exciting this is. 81 years old, and here I am. I'm on the sideline pretty well, but I'm sure observing what's going on, and I am sure thrilled with what it is, what's happening.
Well, Red, I'm just pleased as punch to have you at my side for so much of this, because the level of experience that you bring, especially because you've been around it so long and have had your eyes open to it for so long, you know, I've got a lot of catching up to do, and a lot of us do. I mean, there's a lot of these people that are listeners here that contact us, and, you know, they talk to me like I'm some kind of expert, and simply because, you know, I've just been doing a little research. And, you know, I haven't been at this like you have, Fred, so we need your story to be told. We need for you to pass down that knowledge, and that's been a major problem here in the United States, is that we've allowed the television sets and you know, the media and video games and things like that to replace our story being passed on from generation to generation. I just want to become the kind of storyteller that you are, and that Mona's being, and that Dr. Kate's being, and we just need to have a missionary attitude here. We've got to. That's a problem with a lot of the leadership in some of these liberty groups. They do not have what I call a missionary attitude, and that is they don't want anybody else stealing their thunder. But we've got to do that. We've got to be mentors and recreate ourselves in other people and be pleased when they go out and spread that word and have their own moment telling their story.
Right.
But that comes
so
from that
true,
sense
Jerry.
Of community too.
Yes, absolutely.
With this economy going downtown, we are discovering how we need each other. I think that's something that that is happening. We need each other. As long as everything was going so smooth and everything, we didn't need each other. We didn't need community. We didn't need neighbors. But now we need community. We need neighbors. We need fellowship. We have to make sure that the domestic enemy, the enemy within, that they know that we are united in the principle of we want justice, we want liberty, we want integrity in our government. We sure don't have integrity today, I'll tell you. It's something they don't know what that word means. And so anyway, I have high hopes. So I've always been an optimist because I've always felt that we were going to see a day when we would have this awakening in this country. My voice is kind of going down, and so I'm going to have to kind of back off here and just listen.
Well, you can listen to me for just a minute, Red. we didn't start this show off with a prayer, but I want to finish it that way tonight. Because
yes.
I think we need to include that in every show, and I believe it's important. I've been talking with a lot of people about what their picture of victory in all of this is, because we obviously are fighting a battle, and I believe that most people understand that it is a spiritual battle that we're fighting. But in my mind, if we don't do anything else but get some people to recognize that they've got to place 100% trust in God, if we don't do anything but that, we will have had a victory. And Red, I know you're the eternal optimist, and we appreciate your optimism, because so often we can get caught up in playing the blame game or pointing the fingers at people and not taking responsibility ourselves. And you help us through that. But you also help us by bringing out Scripture and the lessons that have been taught in God's Word that should be preparing us today for exactly what we're facing. I don't know if we can restore constitutional governance in this country. But I sincerely believe that if it's going to happen, it's going to happen with God, and God's got to go before us in this. But what we may be facing, we may not be able to recapture our collective sovereignty in this country. We may have to do it on a much smaller scale. And if they keep going the way they're going and people don't stand up at this time, we could be entering a time of tribulation. And if that happens, there may be even some of us that become martyrs. But through that whole process, we have to trust God. We cannot turn our backs on Him through this process. And if it's going to come back, I sincerely believe that it's because we are looking to God for the answers and asking Him to go before us in everything that we do. And I just want to get that out, because I believe that that's why I'm on this show, really, is I don't think God would have me in this position, because I believe He's the one that's put me in this position to have a voice. And I believe that's the message. That is the primary, most important, critical message that has to be put out there in this process. And I know we've got people who are atheists and agnostics and libertarians who don't like to hear this kind of stuff, but it still needs to be said. And so I've said it.
I can assure you that our chances of doing this by ourselves, with our own wisdom and our own muscle and our efforts, it's not going to work. It is not going to work, and I can assure you, because there's too much history out there. There's too many nations that have gone down because they did not recognize the Creator. We've had too many governments that have tried to be, they become false gods. And that's exactly where we're at in this country right today. The federal god, I call it the federal god many times. And so, you know, either we have his help and you know, work with him, or it's all going to go. It's going to, we're going to write some very bad history. And I don't think that's necessary. I think that we're going to have a change, and I'm confident of it. I just think that when people get their backs up against the wall, they aren't going to call for the federal government to save them, because the federal government won't even be able to save itself. And so they're going to be calling on the true God. I can guarantee you that, and that's going to happen. And so, and you know, every state in their preamble and such for their constitution, state constitutions, and of course, the founders, when they put together our national constitution and all, they all recognized that there was a God. And I think that's why we have been such a great nation up to this point. And I think the evidence is clear that we have forgotten our Creator God in this country, and he wants to come back, and he wants our worship, he wants our lives to be stand for that which is good, that which is righteous. Anyway, I said it a couple weeks ago, we're seeing repentance across this nation. And I have high hopes because of the repentance that I see happening across the country. I better shut up. I'm running out of voice. I've been really down here for about 10 days or so, and so my voice it's taken a beating.
God bless you, Red.
Ladies, we got about 12 more minutes left in the show, so you got plenty of opportunity to talk here. And I think the guys on this show have already gotten our quota of words out for the day, so it's your turn.
Go ahead, Dr. Kate.
She must be over in the chat room having fun.
I'm here.
She's on mute.
It's a little bit of a delay. Well, this has been a delightful discussion, and it occurred to me I only had one more question for Mona. Well, yeah, right, only one more question. But and I think I heard you say you had a broad age distribution of folks that you're working with, and wondered if you had any special techniques that you're using with the youth and stuff like that.
Well, we actually do have a committee which is called Youth for Freedom,
right,
and
on.
Also an Education Committee. And we are very, very, very blessed because I tell you, back in November, just a few months ago, families from Nevada moved in to Hamilton, and they are living their dream of opening an educational bookstore. So we have our own educational bookstore, which includes constitutional studies and homeschool materials. God is so good. He's just put everything in our midst right here in Hamilton. And so they have special sessions for the kids and adults. And as a matter of fact, the Constitution Studies class is just adjourning. But Oh boy, it's just been fabulous.
Does Montana have any special laws that really allow for the free homeschooling of children? Free meaning, you know, not money, meaning your right, parents' rights to educate children at home.
Absolutely. We have a lot of homeschool families here.
That's good, because, you know, there are some, I read somewhere that some parent was arrested for homeschooling or something like that, their children. But one of the things that's catching on fire here in sort of like east central Idaho, which is right over the mountains where I live from, is what was Terry had talked about this as well at some point, is the gradual taking kids out of school once a week or once a month on either various different days or so forth to basically provide for the education of children in the Constitution. And if that could spread across Idaho, you can envision, you know, parents having constitutional field trips with kids to do various things. So aside from the homeschooling, is there more, and the library you mentioned, is there more of that as well that you're seeing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Parents are waking up to the fact that their children are being indoctrinated, as they were. And so, it's a trickle-down effect. What's happening with the movement? The movement is educating the parents. The parents are bringing the kids. The parents are going home and saying, huh, we got to do something different here. I don't know any of this stuff. I never was taught the Constitution. Well, we're going to start doing that for our kids. And so it has been affecting the entire families, the family structure here, which is actually bringing it back to what it should be.
Oh, that is just such good news. What could be better than that? The families learning together on this.
Yes. Yes.
Just terrific. Just terrific.
We even have instances of families here that are getting rid of their TVs. So that the family can get together and talk and learn together and study, and how about just talk, you know?
Now here's another question, and let me just preface this. And Terry, I see we only have a little bit of time left, so I'll try not to take any more than 10 hours to explain this. but there are a lot of Hispanic people in the area. And most of them are legal. Some of them are illegal. There's both a lot of concern about this invasion, if you will, of illegal immigrants, but also a lot of compassion and concern about people who have grown up there. At the same time, the context here is, I believe that Obama's going to move for amnesty, so essentially all illegal aliens get on his side and assure re-election of the Democrats, and while he does that, he throws black people off the bus. But in any case, do you have any of that kind of issue going on, and how are you addressing it?
We don't have that issue here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of strange because I'm originally from Southern California. I am Mexican, so I totally understand that completely.
Mm-hmm.
And I've
me
only
too.
Been
I was born in
Montana for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, were you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, see, we have that in common. I wasn't born there, but I'm Mexican, so second generation. So it is, we don't have that problem here in Montana at all. So, but it doesn't mean that we don't have our share of other problems. You know, with the entitlement, we absolutely do have that.
I think there's some music playing. I'm going to try to mute myself.
Okay.
Oh, we don't want you to mute yourself. You got to keep talking here. You got 6 more minutes to talk. Mona?
I'm here.
What else have you guys got going that's exciting up in Montana other than your May meeting? I know there's other things going on.
Sorry, I'm back on. The music was crazy. So please go ahead.
What other things do we have going on?
Yeah.
Well, you know what we're excited about is we've got. Hold on 1 second.
I told them, but nobody bought.
Okay, that's fine. Sorry. I have to tell you what we have planned for our next monthly meeting in April. We are actually have decided that we're going to invite all the candidates that are running for office. The filing deadline is the 15th of March, so they will have already. We will know who those candidates are. And we're going to actually put those candidates on the stage by category. So, for instance, we're going to have all the sheriff's candidates on the stage. We will have a panel of people from within our leadership group that are going to be asking these individuals constitutional questions. They will not know what the questions are prior to getting to the event, and they will actually the questions will be asked randomly, and they'll only have 2 minutes to answer the question. Every person that comes to the event from the audience will have a ballot. The ballot will have every single candidate on it, and then they get to decide after they've heard all of the answers to the questions how they would vote. They can actually vote for these candidates that night. Now, remember, they're not just Republican candidates. They're all candidates we're going to invite, and we'll see who shows up to this. And we usually have 500 to 600 people, and, you know, we can move the vote here, locally especially. So that's what we're doing for our event in April, so that then it gives the people the opportunity to now know who these people are that are running for office, unlike before where we didn't know who they were. And the incumbents would usually slide right back into office because the name was recognizable or their face was recognizable. That is no longer going to be the issue here, and that's one of our goals, is to educate and inform and put a face to a name. And now I'm going to encourage the individuals in our group to actually challenge and meet these people personally.
That's awesome. See, I love to hear this kind of stuff because people that are listening in other states need to know what kind of things they can do in their own state. And that's awesome because that draws that makes it that really brings it down to a practical application for the candidates.
Yes, it does. And it also puts sovereignty back in the people. You have to show them what that means or what it looks like, how it feels to be a sovereign, to be in charge of your life, to be responsible for your life. And one last thing I wanted to say is one of our strengths here is that, you know, you just got to love on people. Just love on them. No judgment, no condemnation, just love on them. And they just automatically come.
Explain that a little more. And you know, it was really funny. I've been involved in competitive barbershop singing for the last 10 years, and I kind of stepped away from it this year. But the one thing I noticed about the best directors had a way of holding their people accountable without beating them up, because accountability can be way too forced sometimes. And I think that's maybe kind of what you're talking about a little bit, is that we kind of beat people up a little bit too much in this accountability process. And the accountability process really needs to be a very natural thing. It happens through relationships rather than sitting there admonishing people you really don't know. So if you could elaborate on how you go about that or maintaining that kind of warm and approachable atmosphere, I'd love to hear that.
Well, you know, I know that personally, I'm drawn to people that look and always bring up my strengths, not my weaknesses, but my strengths. And so I'm always drawn to people that encourage and inspire me. And I figure, well, if that feels good to me, I'm pretty sure that it's probably going to feel good to other people.
Mona, we are out of time, and I want to get a quick prayer in here, and I really want to say thank you for being with us Let's pray. Father God, we just thank you so much for having Mona with us tonight and all the participation. Thank you for giving us a voice and help us all to tell our story in a way that glorifies you, Father. We pray that we can turn our hearts to God, to you, and that our listeners will grasp that message and hear it and accept it. In the name of Jesus Christ. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Red.
You're welcome. Thanks, Terry.
Good night,
Thanks,
everybody.
Thanks,
Good night, everybody.
Jake. Thank you.